There is an endless sea of podcasts about entrepreneurship. Talking about it, but not living it. We live it every day. This is Inside the Wolf's Den, an entrepreneurial journey with Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel, talking about real estate investing, but also encompassing general subjects in regards to owning small to medium-sized businesses, and of course, all the struggles that business owners must overcome to be successful. This is Inside the Wolf's Den, and this is Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Inside the Wolf's Den with Joni Wolfswinkel and my other half,
Sean Wolfswinkel.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. It's a busy start to the week, but never a dull moment. Let's just put it that way. But it's been good. So yeah, I'm excited about today because it's what I talk about, you know,
every day.
Five times a day, it seems like.
So we're continuing on with our series, taking a deeper dive into buying, managing, and selling residential real estate. Last week, we talked about real estate cycles and now is a good time to buy. And, you know, what was the key takeaways from that?
That now is still a good time to buy, even though, you know, we would think we're at the, top of a market, but it's still a great time to buy. So it's still, no matter what cycle you're in, you can make money at it is the key.
Right. And if you hold the property long enough, then it will soon pay off.
The nice thing about renting real estate is that if you wait long enough or you hold out long enough, you can usually recover from a bad decision. You can recover from a down market, whatever. It doesn't matter.
You're getting cash flow appreciation. You're paying down the debt.
Yeah.
And some of our best deals were done, you know, held on to them in the recession and,
we bought at the top and then held through.
Held 10 years and almost doubled.
Correct. It just shows that you're holding long enough, and with interest rates, we talked about this last episode. But interest rates where they are, at the time of recording this, is just lower than
ever,
and it's just remarkable how cheap it is. I mean, when we got into real estate investing 20 years ago, 8% was our first house that we got a loan on, and that was really good. And then you think about today
in the fours,
threes. And then if it's your primary residence, you're in the twos. Mm-hmm. So, and then 3% on an investment property, 8% was on our personal residence. Yeah. Now they're in the twos, which is crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. So today we're taking a deeper dive into selecting markets and properties. And, you've been at this 20 years. So why don't you go into, detail on how you select a market?
Yeah, I mean, we're going to be talking, it's probably going to be geared more towards if you're in another market and you're looking at investing probably passively in another market long term. But you can take some of these, advice and things we've learned to just, look at a market. If you're looking to buy and flip, you can apply it to these and just looking at selecting maybe even a sub-market within your city. There's different markets and different types of properties. So, the biggest key, we're going to start off with just list of different attributes of selecting a good market. So the first one, definitely, you want to be following the jobs. Mm-hmm. So you want to be entering a market where jobs are relocating, companies are relocating, so there's growth. It's an exciting either because of a certain industry or it could be because of multiple industries.
Right.
You want to be studying where are people migrating to. So, not only jobs, but also migration of people. So, the two big things is companies are looking for places they can get tax savings. And so they're relocating to areas or where they're just easier to do business.
Yeah.
A lot of states like California and New York and some of those places, it's getting very hard just to own and operate a business, and then say they had to develop land and factories and all that. Well, it's getting very expensive. If land costs are through the roof, they're looking at places in the Midwest, places down in the Southwest, where they can buy affordable land, they can get affordable labor, and so they're looking at different areas in the country and finding out that they can you know, attract people to those areas. And those are the areas you want to focus on for sure. Because wherever their jobs are growing, that's a market that's going to continue to
grow. Thriving market.
Yeah. You see real estate prices rise as more and more people get in there. Developers will follow to support all those people.
Migrate. We see that every day in Texas.
Correct. And Texas, yes. We're, of course, very biased to Texas because we live here. But if you ever visit and come around Texas, it's got all those attributes.
Oh, absolutely.
Very pro-business. Mm-hmm. You know, they do some tax things to attract businesses to relocate here. You know, like example, like Tesla and you know, that made all the major oil companies. Right. All these places have relocated their headquarters to Texas in different parts. Dallas, Austin, a lot of tech companies have relocated to Austin. And then Houston, a lot of oil and gas companies for sure, and technology companies and medical.
Yeah.
So follow the jobs, follow where the people are going. You know, right now there's a lot of migration of people from, they're sick and tired of being in the cold. Mm-hmm. And they're, you know, especially the baby boomer generation, and they're migrating, they're retiring, and they want to get out of the cold, so they're migrating south. So Florida, Texas, Alabama, New Mexico, you know, Arizona, those are all attractive places where it's warm. You know, kind of the Sun Belt states. And so that's another place to look for, where are people retiring and migrating to? Because again, it's going to cause growth in residential development. It's going to be growth in commercial development to support all those people. So follow the jobs and follow the people.
Yeah.
Another thing is just, we kind of just mentioned this, is your state pro growth. You know, there's a lot of, you know, states that are just aren't giving the tax advantages to businesses. They think they make too much, but they don't realize that those businesses bring in a lot of jobs. Mm-hmm. It brings in tax revenue. It brings in property tax revenue. And sometimes I think people, you know, fail to miss that opportunity. And Texas has been always very pro-growth, pro-business.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, New Mexico for years, we also, you know, own and operate businesses in New Mexico. And for years it was anti-growth. Mm-hmm. They didn't want people coming into the state. They wanted to keep it, you know, natural and all that. And then it's changed a little bit. Yeah, Netflix moved into
Facebook has moved into there.
Yeah. So they finally have turned that corner where the result was that the real estate market boomed.
I mean, yeah, it's been the best it's been in
decade. Yeah, we're running, the prices are have risen, and then also like our vacancy rates, like less than 1% there. So it just shows that now there's not enough houses to support all the people, but they finally turned that corner.
Yep. Affordability is another one, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, is your market affordable? So, you know, my brother, a good example, he lives in LA. It's like, it's ridiculous what he pays for, like,
probably like $4,000 for a
two bedroom little house. And it's like, and then you look at the rent that they, you know, compared to what that house is worth. So it's like $1 million house. It only brings in $5,000 in revenue per month. How are you going to make that? How are you going to make your investment work? You're going to be negative cash flow.
Definitely not going to cash flow.
And that's great if you can get the appreciation. Mm-hmm. But what happens when the market turns and corrects, and then you're upside down and you got negative cash flow. So it's just not worth it. So,
you look at how affordable is housing and if you can cash flow.
Correct. So is the housing still affordable? Mm-hmm. Is there still inventory out there that you can buy that's affordable? And also what will attract people is affordability. So if the people that are migrating to that area can afford a good lifestyle, have extra money to go out to eat, have money for entertainment, and still afford their house, it's going to, again, boost the economy in all sectors, which is going to create growth. What you see in Texas, very much, because people can make a good living, and yet, you know, we're below the national average as far as affordability and housing costs. And so look at that when you're studying the different markets.
Yeah, and don't invest on speculation alone, too, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing with going back to the affordability, something that you can kind of use as a gauge, I don't like to use it. A lot of people still have this in their mind, but the 1% rule. Mm-hmm. So what the house can rent for compared to what you can purchase for, the old golden rule used to be 1% is a good a good market or good house. And that, yes, we haven't seen 1% in the stuff we sell for probably 5-6 years. Mm-hmm. and it used to be a good rule of thumb, but you know, obviously housing prices has risen a lot in the last 10 years. So it's kind of a, but it's good to use as a rule of thumb to start off with.
Yes.
The problem is like, don't use it as your only indicator, because you can probably find 1% in like a war zone area. So like if a $60,000 house that rents for $600, mm-hmm. you can get the 1% rule, but you and I wouldn't want
to. No, I don't want to go be collecting rent in there.
No. And that, and then you think about the amount of deferred maintenance and issues and the maintenance right. costs that
so
are going to
be. So is it really 1%?
Yeah, no. At the end of the day, you're probably netting less than what you would net if you didn't just go off that rule.
Yeah.
So cash flow, yes, but you don't want to be investing just on speculation. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a lot of people lost everything in 7 and mm-hmm. 8 when they invested on speculation right. alone. So the house got to cash flow. No matter where you're investing, you got to have positive cash flow.
Absolutely.
Now, there's different markets that offer more cash flow than others, mm-hmm. and usually those markets don't have great appreciation or growth, so meaning...
You're buying on cash flow alone.
Alone, yeah. So the house will be worth the same amount in 10 years right. as it is today.
Yeah.
You know, but it has higher cash flow yes. today, so it gives you a higher return. Mm-hmm. Then there's markets like Texas where you can get
both.
Yeah,
you can get cash flow and
correct. And it's not as much cash flow as maybe some of the other markets, but you're getting a little bit of everything. So yes. you're getting growth, you're getting cash flow, and then of course, you know, paying down your mortgage and mm-hmm. debt, and then depreciation.
Right.
So but definitely the market's got to at least have some positive cash flow to make sense. You got to have it can't be coming out of your pocket every month mm-hmm. to support that. And it, when you're looking at that too, you should factor in that cash flow should include positive cash flow should include some kind of vacancy and maintenance allowance, because you're going to have maintenance, you're going to have a turnover. Mm-hmm. So that got to be factored in there too and still be positive even after that,
right.
after you factor in. So, you know, kind of a good rule of thumb is, you know, 5% for each is kind of another golden rule to use. And I think that's it, that will help you weather through those times that you do have a vacancy and or you do have a maintenance request.
Yeah.
So, and then another thing, as far as looking at markets, you know, you got to be aware of the weather events.
Yeah. But even at that though, I mean, you as long as you're properly insured, you know, because we have natural disasters and we've personally been hit a couple of times with natural disasters, but. You know, we've been properly insured.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So. But I think it's, but you just need to go in eyes wide open so you know what you're getting into.
Know what to expect in the event that does happen.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, every market has some kind of, whether it be flooding, hurricanes,
fires,
cold winters, so pipes freezing.
Right.
So people in the, we don't understand that because, but like people in the Northeast, I mean, they had to worry about pipes freezing and that kind of stuff, or basements flooding. Or,
just fires, know what you're getting into.
Mudslides in California.
And protect yourself, you know. Correct.
Yeah, and make sure you're properly insured. And then that when you're evaluating a market and you're looking at specific properties, that the insurance is going to cover those natural disasters. So that's the other thing.
That's key, too.
Because there's, I mean, like, for a good example, is like here in Houston, obviously, we're 60 miles from the coast, the Gulf of Mexico, so... there's always a threat of hurricanes, and you can get cheaper insurance than what we quote or what we'll offer to you or want you to get. But the problem with that is it's
probably not going to cover certain things.
Yeah, name storms or, you know, so you have a hurricane come through and blow off your roof. It's probably not going to be covered.
Right.
But so always make sure that you're covered for all the, weather events that can happen.
Yes.
And then there's specific, you know, work with the person that the expert in that market, which will lead to kind of the next thing we're talking about is always having your key team members for each market.
Yeah, I think that's key too, because I mean, you might have a, you know, insurance agent in, you know, California that you work with that might not know, you know,
what events we have here.
Here in Texas. Yeah. So they might insure you for something different.
Correct.
Right?
And even Dallas and Houston, we have the more threat of hurricanes. Dallas has the more threat of hail damage.
Yeah. And we've seen tornadoes. It. Yeah, we've seen it where it happens. And you're like, no, you have to, you know, you have to get insured for certain things.
Correct.
And so, yeah, just make sure that you have the right team in Correct. Place for
so,
that.
So you should be looking for agents, mortgage companies that know those, that work in those areas, property managers is a key, turnkey providers, real estate agents. So, you know, investigate all those, and they can be your, you need to build that team and those team of experts and people that you can trust, and maybe go out to that market and visit with them. But they're going to be the experts for you.
Right. Yeah. I think that's one of the key points there is, and so important, because it doesn't matter where you purchase a property, right? If, as long as you have the right team backing you, whether it's a property manager or your real estate agent, you know, your insurance agent, anyway, as long as you have the right team, then you can invest anywhere.
Correct. And also, if you don't have that right team, it doesn't matter what the person selling to the property or the performer that you're looking at, that's never going to be realized if you don't have the back, the right team backing it. And your team's going to know those certain market conditions. So you might think Houston, you know, every year is underwater at one time in the year because of the news. And if you look, you know, but that's not the people that live here, you know, we know that there's certain parts of town that no matter what, every major rainstorm floods. And there was, it's not like we're buying houses in those neighborhoods. So we know what markets, what areas to choose. We know we stay out of flood zones, either 500-year, 100-year floodplains. So, like, we know that we're the expert. We know where to look in the city that never flood, that don't have issues, that didn't have any issues in Harvey. But you don't know that unless you're working with that expert.
Right, yeah. And I think it's important that, you know, if you are looking to invest outside your own hometown, you go and visit your team. And, you know, it's a long-term relationship that you have with them. And so you want to feel comfortable with them that they're going to take care of your investment.
Correct. And that's something I've always preached when I'm having one-on-ones with clients is like, hey, you know, we're with you after the sale. It's not like
we're not going anywhere.
Wishing you good luck and you know, selling your property and you know, we're done. You know, it's no, like I'm right. The next day after, I'm still there, you know, helping you. I'm in now the property management side, and we're working on
that. We're hand in hand. I mean, you know, we work side by side.
So. And you want somebody, a team that's gonna be there throughout your whole journey, and gonna be there, you know, until you sell the property and you're ready to move on.
So. Absolutely. So now that we've talked about markets, let's talk about the properties, new construction versus existing property. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think it's just there's different expectations. So obviously new is just like, I'm going to compare it to cars. So like, you know, a new car, you have warranties, it's brand new. Nobody's ever been in it. There's no scratches or dents, you know, it's all low maintenance.
Yeah.
So low maintenance, the price point's going to be obviously higher because it's brand new. You know, so if you're buying a new car versus a used, what are you paying for? You're going to pay more for the new. The return's probably going to be lower because it's a brand new. You're paying a little bit more, so your return, but you should have less maintenance.
Right.
And you should have warranties to do that. You're going to typically attract better quality and more bountiful amount of tenants with new construction. Mm-hmm. And then as far as like existing inventory or existing homes, you should get a better deal on it. Just like you buy a used car, you should get a better deal on a used car. You should get a better deal on a used home.
Right.
So you should be able to buy it below replacement cost. Mm-hmm. So below what it would cost to build that home new, you should be paying less. So your return's higher.
But you probably are going to have maintenance.
Correct. You're going to have some maintenance. Things are going to break on it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, depending on who you're working with, you know, if you're working with a turnkey provider, they should have taken care of majority of those maintenance issues. Mm-hmm. So you should have a new roof, a new HVAC, you should have some newer stuff and updated. So it shouldn't need much the first, you know, but things are still going to break.
Yeah. Things are still going to come up.
The walls, the stuff is still probably 30, 40 years old, but you know, the major components are probably been updated.
Right.
If you're looking, you know, with an agent, you know, make sure they know or get good contractor bids so you know exactly what you're getting yourself into. Mm-hmm. Like what, because it's always going to be more than what you think. Always. And so make sure you get good, accurate bids and maybe three of them so that you can know your numbers going in and not be blindsided by something once you get in there. And
right.
Yeah. Look at another thing to look at with properties is make sure it conforms to that area. So what is the average bedroom, bath, garages,
square footage
right. for that neighborhood or that, you know?
Want to compare apples to apples.
Correct. And what are people attracted to? Mm-hmm. What do people really want? What's the largest tenant pool and owner pool? Because eventually you're going to sell it. So what are people wanting in that market? And that's something you should be looking at. And your experts, again, your agents, your property managers, your turnkey providers, they're going to know what rents and what sells in the market. So like a good example for us, like 3-bedroom, 2-bath, 2-car garage, 1,500 square feet.
Our niche. Yeah, that's what we looked for.
Yeah, and a lot of what we built is our average build is a 3-bedroom, 2-bath, 1,600 square foot home.
Right.
And that, because that's, again, it's going to attract the, it's usually the first time home buyer, which is the largest buying pool, the largest tenant pool. And so that's what we attract to, because that's what we want to be in. Mm-hmm. And then our price to rent ratio is going to be more favorable at that square footage and bedroom and bath.
Absolutely.
One thing that also you got to know is, like, even though I said 2-car garage, for like our New Mexico properties and even in Houston, there's a lot of areas within Houston and in Albuquerque where there's no garage.
Right.
And that's normal. That conforms to the neighborhood. Almost all the houses don't have garages. But that's one thing for a lot of people to get over. Mm-hmm. Do you have trouble renting with no garage?
No, not at all.
Yeah. Do people use the garages?
Actually, for the most part, they don't use them. Yeah. Most people here park outside.
So. Yeah, and when we both Albuquerque is a very neutral climate. The other market we're in. The nice thing about Albuquerque, which is attractive, it's very neutral, meaning you don't have weather events, you don't have hurricanes, you don't have. It's not extremely cold and it's not extremely hot, and so it's very neutral and nice seasons. You know. Mm-hmm. But even here, it doesn't get cold enough, so people don't park. They use them as gyms, as man caves, storage. Majority of them storage. Right. It's amazing what people store and keep.
Yeah, but as long as it conforms to the neighborhood, though,
then it makes
sense.
That's
okay. Yeah. Right.
It's not a deterrent from either renting.
Right.
I think consider the school districts, the crime rates, the location to amenities, so like stores, employers, all that should be factored in.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't want to, of course, something way outside of town is probably going to take a little bit longer to lease or because it's far, not as many people want to live out there.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, look at those. I don't think it needs to be, I know there's some people that look just at schools, you know, because that's important to them and their kids, but you got to understand there's people, that rent in.
Yeah, absolutely. And then even now, so like with COVID, like, you know, looking for the additional office space, you know, because you're going to see a lot of that too, where people are starting to work from home now.
Correct. Probably a 4-bedroom might be more, attractive than the 3s going forward because people are using that 4th as an office. Sounds good. Yeah. Watch out for odd layouts and poor designs, right?
Yes.
We've bought a few of those over the years.
We have bought a few of those over the years. And I think, they never work out. You think you get a good, you kind of slam dunk on a deal. But, I mean, we've had to knock down half of a house because it didn't, didn't have correct permitting. And it could be a mess.
So I think, she's talking about a house we bought. It was a unique situation. We bought one from a mortgage. So we tried to buy the second mortgage to foreclose on the house and buy it at a discount. And then we'd reinstate the first. Well, the second lien holder was a small bank local to Albuquerque and wouldn't sell it. So then they were being really stubborn.
Yeah.
So we just happened to randomly go approach Bank of America, which was the first, and buy the note directly from them and then foreclose on the house.
That should have probably been our first red flag because like Bank of America never really
sells their individual notes
and they were willing to do that. We're like, we got a good deal.
Once we get in there and own it, we find out that, half of the house was not ever built to code and never permitting was never done. And the biggest thing was on the easement and on the, they had a setback easement and it was infringing on that. So it was, they made us knock it down. So it was 1,200 square feet we knocked down on the house. So it was an interesting.
So watching a bulldozer knock down 1,200 square feet of your house.
that was
a blow. But
I mean, but just we've also bought where the, like you had to go through a bedroom to go out to the backyard.
Yeah,
or go, you know, the only bathroom was in one bedroom, you know, or something weird like that, which, you know, it does matter. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be hard to rent no matter how great the deal is. It doesn't matter. People don't want to live.
Yeah, they don't want. Yeah,
they don't want that as well. So if you can conform it, meaning the only way, recommendation I can say is like if you have an odd shaped house, can you make it right? Because then there's opportunity for value add, because you can, if you can take an odd house and make it perfect or make it better, like, you know, add an extra bathroom or, you know, move the back door to somewhere else in the hallway. Can you make it work? And then you can add value to the house. You still get a good deal, but make it happen. Mm-hmm. We've always been successful at just sticking to, you know, again, those entry level bread and butter houses. Yeah. So like the 3-bedroom, 2-bath, 1500 square foot homes, those have always appealed, you know, and worked for us because we can keep them leased consistently. When we're ready to resell, mm-hmm. there's always buyers in that price point.
Usually just have cosmetic issues as well, so they didn't, you know, need a whole bunch of work. You know,
correct.
Clean paint, you know, change out the flooring.
Yeah, we've never bought. I mean, we have, but the best properties have always been just they're outdated,
right?
And just need to be brought to current market trends and stuff. Yeah, but we've always kind of stayed away from large fire damage houses. Mm-hmm. You know, major foundation issue houses, sometimes it's not even worth what it costs to rebuild those.
Yes.
Pools, do we like pools?
For rental purposes, I do not like pools. Yeah. I mean, if you're, you know, buying to renovate and sell, then yes, maybe.
Yeah.
But even then, think
about the houses we bought to retail and with pools. They were just money pits. Like the house looked great. We did great on the house. And just seemed like every time we turned around, that pool just needed money. You know, like it was first this. Then it was like we had to plaster it. Then the pump goes out. Then the heater goes out. Then they get their inspections and something else breaks. You know, the those thing that goes, the cleans it, you know, breaks.
Yes. So it's a constant. No, I mean, if I can buy a house without a pool, that's better.
For a flip, I don't even recommend it. But if you can make it work, cool, but definitely not for rental. Mm-hmm. Avoid larger houses. Those have always been, when it comes time for make ready, those things, like we just went under contract on probably our largest. We've had two. We sold them both this year, but you know, they were almost 4,000 square foot houses, and
yeah, the make readies are, you know,
huge. Yeah. Just to repaint that house, mm-hmm. yeah, inside and out was mm-hmm. a big cost burden. So, do you recommend staying away from?
Very large? And I think it's also it takes longer to lease those as well. Whereas your bread and butter houses, you know, 2 to 3 weeks, it may take you, you know, six weeks to get it leased out
because they're usually priced higher,
right?
They're more expensive, a larger family is going to move into those. Mm-hmm. Because tenants are also looking at like utility costs and, you know, what it's going to cost to maintain the house, and it might not be in their budget.
Yeah.
And so we've noticed that expense have always been much higher, mm-hmm. And maintenance issues on larger houses. Usually they have two AC units. So then that more for you to go out on mm-hmm. a system. And so it's never been a great thing for us. And then watch out for certain things for that particular market. So, you know, Texas, we have foundation issues.
Yeah.
And we have dirt that moves and settles. So
you can almost expect to have foundation repair at some point, right?
Yeah. I mean, a home that's 40, 50 years old, if it hasn't had any foundation work, it's probably mm-hmm. going to need some at some point. It might not be the whole house, but just a certain section of the house might need to be correct. But the positive thing about Texas is everybody knows that's part of the market. That's part of the condition. So if it's been corrected and it's been done, there usually no problem.
Right.
Yeah, it comes with lifetime warranties. Majority of the companies in town mm-hmm. will carry a lifetime warranty with it. So once it's done, it's not that big. It's really not that too much.
Compared to New Mexico, I mean, it's totally different. I can spend a couple of grand here in Texas, you know, repairing a foundation. But in New Mexico, it's like 20,000, you know,
exactly.
So.
Yeah. The one we did was like 60 some thousand just for that. Like, totally killed the deal.
We were expecting we're going to be paying Texas prices.
Yeah. So we're like, 15,000, that should be enough budget. And it's like 60 some thousand to get it done. It was a shocker.
It hurt.
We still own that house because of it.
It'll pay off though.
Yeah, exactly.
10 years from now, it'll pay
20
off.
Years from now. Maybe our kids or when we die, it'll finally make sense. But or 30 years from now when we pay off the mortgage. The but watch out for fire damage, poor workmanship, being on a fault line, being close to where mudslides happen in California probably is not a good idea. So just watch those weather events, you know, or those particular areas. Watch out for rivers and bayous, because those are always typically areas that can flood if it gets enough water. So just watch that. So
yeah. I mean, I think there's, you know, pros and cons, new construction versus existing. I personally like the new construction. You know, we know our costs going in. We know the cost of the land. We know what it costs to build. There's typically no surprises. But then again, you know, I do like the other end of it, of getting a good deal and negotiating. And yeah, it might cost a little bit more to, you know, put it all together, and there might be more surprises in it. But as long as you factor that in and know going in it, then you should get a good return.
Correct.
Right. So cool. Oh, cool. Well, thanks everyone for listening in, and make sure you reference back to the last episode on the real estate cycles if you didn't get to hear that. And we will see you next time. Make sure you reach out to us at insidethewolvesden.com and I'm on Instagram, Joni M. Wolf, and Sean the Wolf on Instagram as well. So, and leave us a review. We would love to hear from you. Take care, everyone.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Inside the Wolf's Den, an entrepreneurial journey with Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel. Tons of entrepreneurial podcasts are out there talking.
Cog, cog, cogging.
But Joni and Sean are living it every single day. Their portfolio now includes many franchises and medium-sized businesses. We talk about the trials and motivators of successfully running a business. Join us again soon for another podcast. But until then, reach out on the website at InsideTheWolf'sDen.com, on Facebook at Inside the Wolf's Den, on Instagram at Inside the Wolf Den. We'll see you again soon. This is Inside the Wolf's Den. We'll see you next time.